Hi everyone, welcome to this webinar from the Business Marketing Club. I'm Alex Brayshaw, I'm a B2B marketer, your chairperson for today, and I'm very excited about hearing from all of our speakers. But first, a little bit about why we're here. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers. We provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, podcasts, training, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you've been with us before, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. So this is the third of our show and tell webinars on how business marketers are dealing with change. We're living in a world of uncertainty with COVID-19, recession, and political and social conflict dominating our lives. That calls for us to do business marketing differently now and in the future. Over the course of this webinar series, we'll hear from client side and agency side marketers in businesses from startup to mature corporates about topics ranging from changes in working practices, to changes in purpose and culture, brand, marketing strategy, messages, and channel. They'll be sharing experiences and offering lots of helpful advice. We'll hear shortly how today's speakers are seeing the impact of change on demand generation, marketing agencies, and customer insight. And each speaker has a very different perspective on all of these. As you listen, type a question or comment into the questions box. I'll put your questions and comments to the speaker after we've heard from them. If you represent a business that has a B2B marketing project or a role that you'd like to ask for help for in filling from the community on this call, drop some details in the questions box and I'll mention it at the end of the webinar. Please also flag in the questions box if you'd like to be a speaker at a future BMC webinar, write about this one or find out more about the BMC and we'll be in touch. You can also tweet along today's webinar using the hashtag BMCShowTell. So, on to the main event. Our first speaker today is Scott McLean, co-founder and head of content at Seen and Read, specializing in the design, delivery, and management of content journeys. Scott will offer his take on how business marketers need to expand their lead generation thinking to cover the true buyer's journey. Any questions for Scott, please start your question with Scott and put them in the questions box, and I'll put those questions to him when we've heard from all of our speakers. So, Scott, over to you.
Thank you very much, Alex, and thank you for that introduction. Great to be here. Really looking forward to hearing from the other speakers in a minute. Obviously, you've introduced it, we've changed. Change is obviously what we're all have been experiencing, will be experiencing. From my perspective, where we are seeing change the most is the shift towards lead generation having to be driven through the digital channel and the implications of that. Now, I could speak forever about what that looks like as marketeers that I'm working with are trying to get their digital house in order. But as per my introduction, I'm really just going to drill in on one aspect of that, and that's the journey aspect. And in specifically, how marketers we're working with and what we're seeing in the building of the end-to-end buyer's journey. Now, what do I mean by the buyer's journey? From our perspective, we see the buyer's journey as being the full psychological journey that prospects go on. So that's beyond just the customer journey itself. It looks at where the prospect is identifying the need that they require a solution for, looking at whether they can fix it themselves internally, obviously going into that research piece. But then, you know, it's the psychological journey. So it's the fear, uncertainties and doubts they go through. It's the internal buy-in they have to achieve. It's the business case they have to pull together, as well as then obviously what you'd expect when it gets to consideration phase of looking at B2B providers and hopefully becoming a customer. And what we see is that very few businesses actually have this mapped out from a buyer's perspective. They haven't looked at the steps involved. They haven't looked at the customer needs and how those customer needs might change through the journey. What is the content through that journey? What are the channels, obviously? The contact strategy, how to actually engage with the right people at the right time, and the architecture to support that. And from our perspective, I think that's a great shame, especially in a world where we are now, where we are so digitally driven in a way we have to do lead generation. because by not having that in place, it means that fundamentally we're not there for the prospects at each step of the journey. And it kind of means that we're burning leads a lot by doing so. Now, obviously, this is a show and tell. So I thought I'd try to bring this live through some of the work we're actually doing. And one of the projects which is literally on the cusp of going live is for a B2B payment provider, which is coming from a background where, yes, they had a very funnel-based approach using multiple channels, including live events. So that's gone out the window. And they now need to be digital only. What I find really interesting about them is that actually their growth as a business is being constrained by their reliance upon their sales team having to convert all of their prospects. So they actually need to make the digital channel work harder, and therefore they need the journey not quite to be automated. That would be too much of an exaggeration, but they need prospects to be managing their way through the journey themselves to a greater extent, and for marketing to be facilitating that. So looking at where they are coming from and what they're going to, they've been doing marketing, as you'd expect, very much at the beginning of a journey, thought leadership, awareness building, and then at the end of the journey around the consideration phase, and really missing out the middle bit. So when the buyer is looking to build their internal business case, where the buyer is looking for that internal buy-in, doing that research, they're really not serving, not providing content for that part of the journey. They're not serving it. Interestingly, when we then looked at the needs that they are trying to support through the journey, actually we found that when they identified all of the needs which buyers have, they're only actually serving about a third of them, which means that fundamentally, they're not actually putting the needs of their buyers first in the way they're trying to engage. So lots of missed opportunity. But then the big one for us, which is they really were just focused on feeding leads into the top of the funnel. No real sense of nurturing. So every campaign, everything they were doing was starting almost from ground zero, just throwing people in the top, seeing what came out the bottom, next campaign, do it all over again. And, you know, from our perspective, that is a real missed opportunity, because why not nurture and lead through? Now, most of us as B2B marketeers spend months taking a lead through the journey, getting them qualified and so forth. So that nurturing aspect of it is vitally important. So what we've been doing with them, well, we've been building out the contents of it is full through the journey, replanning their marketing execution. So they're not only their campaigning, they've actually got that sustain element. And also really importantly, in Salesforce, making sure there's suppression files around the contact strategy, so they're engaging people in the right way. Where this will take them is that they will have a fully connected content journey, so that a prospect who is engaged with, be it through a campaign, be it inbound, will actually be served up the next content logically to progress them through the journey, therefore helping them sort of do that semi-automated nurturing of a lead through the journey. And because there's tagging behind the content, they will understand where the prospects are at any point. So if there does need to be an intervention from the sales team are actually doing that from an informed basis. And that informed basis actually understanding as well, not just where they are on the journey as a prospect, but also what are the needs which that prospect has. Because by understanding the content which is consumed, you can understand the needs the client has. Now, that's really the show and tell aspect. And what I sort of like to leave it on is by saying that, you know, in a digital lead generation world, can we be in a position where we can afford to burn leads? You know, if you're a B2B marketer and you can, brilliant. I wish I was working in your business. If you're a B2B marketer who can't, then, you know, is one of those things that we need to consider in this whole getting our digital house in order. You know, do we need to put the buyer's journey in amongst that mix? I look forward to hearing any questions or thoughts that people have, and of course, hearing what the rest of the speakers have to say.
Scott, that was fantastic. Thank you very much. And yeah, we'll come back to you with questions later on. So to our second speaker, Fez Askari is the Director of Sales and Strategic Accounts at Strategic IC. In this role, Fez has helped scale-ups through to multi-billion dollar technology companies develop their growth strategies with modern account-based marketing and sales enablement programs. Fez will offer us his take on how marketing can help sales navigate the new norm. So any questions for Fez, please start your question with Fez and put them in the questions box, and I'll put those to him once we've heard from the rest of our speakers, and obviously any further questions for Scott. And a reminder that you can tweet along at BMC Showtel. So Fez, over to you.
Hi all, thanks for having me. And firstly, just to say I've found considerable value in the BMC events and webinars, and it's great to have an opportunity to contribute today. Actually leads quite nicely off from what Scott was just talking about there, but time is tight. So I'm actually gonna share a little context and then explore three key considerations. As Alex mentioned in the intro there, my experience has been on both sides of the table, and currently I reside on the sales side of things as a director at a specialist account-based marketing agency. And in this role, alongside our client marketing challenges, I'm often thinking about the dynamics of modern selling. So as we all know, the world has changed, but COVID or not, the pace of change has been increasing, particularly in the world of sales. My thought for today focuses on the challenges for sales teams in this changing world and how they need to modernize their approach and align with the needs and wants of the modern B2B buyer. This, I believe, is important for marketers to consider and understand. Marketing itself has been working through a period of rapid growth in the marketing technology landscape, along with new channels to consider. But of course, the fundamentals of good marketing don't change that much. And as an individual contributor myself, I've been working at the coal face of what I would call the digital transformation of sales. As sales too is undergoing its own evolution, and this started well before COVID, but we're all experiencing the very real acceleration of the modern sales paradigm. And I can appreciate that many of you are already thinking about this, particularly members of the BMC, but sometimes it's good to take a step back and bring the topic out in the open. This sales and marketing alignment discussion is always 100% where our agency ABM programs start for clients, but whether you're running ABM or not, sales teams are going to need to adapt. We are moving away from face-to-face buying and selling experiences, and dare I say, old school thinking in sales, and we are moving into data-driven, multi-channel, always-on selling environments. However, the bedrock of relationships, insights, and personalization in sales is only going to become more powerful, aligned to the modern buyer's expectations. Again, the fundamentals here don't really change, but now more than ever, I think this means that sales and marketing need to work lock in step and dance to the same beats. So let me spotlight a few areas for consideration. Firstly, I'd like to touch on digital selling and modern buyer engagement. Today's sellers need to be active where buyers want to have the conversation. And for me, that often means in chat and messaging apps. You should be aware of social selling, but there's so much more to consider when it comes to digital selling. We've all been on the receiving end of a poorly designed LinkedIn sales message. So providing the framework, messaging strategy and content for sales engagement across channels like LinkedIn, WhatsApp, Slack, or DriftChat, these are considerations marketing should have alongside the sales enablement function, if that's something that exists within your organization. Really, it's about not skipping the steps and building the right infrastructure and support for modern selling and, more importantly, modern buying. Secondly, by now, we should all be aware of Forrester's research that buyers are 80% of their way through the buyer's journey before engaging a potential vendor as sales ready, kind of what Scott was talking about a moment ago, actually. Of course, there are exceptions to the rule, but mostly this is driven by online research, unsurprising given the volume of content produced by brands today. And you will have heard from other BMC speakers about the intent data opportunity. Now, intent data is great. It allows us to see into some of that 80% of the buyer's journey and potentially engage a prospect earlier into their decision-making process so that we can help shape their thinking. However, intent data also has its pitfalls, and I'm not talking about the data and technology in of itself. One major pitfall I've seen, and intent data is an area that we specialize in, is providing the intent data to sales teams without any real context or process or training, not even having marketing warming up the accounts with segmented messaging and campaigns. So just because you see an account is showing in the intent data, that doesn't mean that they are sales ready. There is a planning piece required here, and brands are remiss for skipping the steps to drive real value from their investment in intent data and how best to activate the data. Lastly, we all understand that face-to-face sales interactions will likely no longer happen at the scale they once had. So how do we support sales teams with building trust and credibility earlier into that buyer journey? Perhaps the buyer journey which the intent data may have uncovered. Well, one example may be by leveraging a video, a medium like video for sales. I understand that for some sales teams in certain industries, there will be considerable pushback on using technology like video and emails and social media, but if well executed, video really does deliver, often driving 3 times more responses than just standard emails. If you don't support the sales teams and show them what good looks like, providing guidance on messaging and tone, they are going to lose out here. In the current climate, ROI is often a consideration for buyers, but we must also remember that B2B buyers are driven by emotion as much as they are by the ROI of a purchase decision. Research from sales enablement vendor Gong suggests that ROI messaging can sometimes have a negative effect on the sales process if not grounded in the context of a relevant story. Video in sales provides the opportunity to communicate often complex propositions and that ROI messaging succinctly at various stages in the buyer's journey, another nod to Scott's piece there, but via personalized videos that leverage a sales team's greatest asset, which is storytelling, and humanizing the process in a now very digital world. In fact, according to some recent research, deals are 127% more likely to close when video is used during any point in the sales process. So marketing needs to play a role in shaping those stories and the narrative for video selling, defining a strong value proposition that fits into the short time you have to grab someone's attention with a sales video in an email. Sales ops people are not marketers. So in summary, I've raised the flag here on a few considerations as to what the future of sales execution may look like and what marketers should be thinking about when seeking to impact that the key number that really matters, revenue, through stronger sales and marketing alignment. Thanks.
Ez, thank you. A lot to think about in there and some great insights. So I'm looking forward to the questions coming in on that. So on to our third speaker, Head of Marketing and Communications at Bird & Bird, Hayley Brooksbank. From branding agencies to professional services, with Network Rail in between, Hayley has spent her career shaping corporate brands and is passionate about the growing board priority of the digital brand. So again, any questions for Hayley, please start your question with Hayley and put them in the questions box. And I'll put those to her at the end. And obviously any questions for Scott and Fez as well. Hayley, over to you.
Thanks very much. And thanks so far to Scott and Fez, some really enlightening stuff there. I'm going to start using modern selling for modern buyers across my law firm. I think they might wonder what modern is apart from the other two words, but we can work on that culturally later. So I have the interesting position at the moment of I've just recently joined Bird & Bird. I joined in June. So that means I actually was recruited and joined during lockdown, which was I wasn't expecting when I entered lockdown to exit it. Well, not that I have yet, but to leave the other side with a new job. That's what I got. So I have some unusual challenges, I suppose, as a new marketing head and director in the law firm, which is about building trust across the team and the actual business and getting under the skin of the current marketing processes and the wider business and organization from remotely, from sitting at my home office rather than being in New Fetter Lane with the rest of the guys. So team building is a tricky one. Brainstorming and innovating over WebEx, really, you know, sort of challenges. I think if anybody has some really sort of golden nuggets on that one, I'd love to hear. But those are different challenges that we're all facing, I think, as we try to be marketeers remotely. So I think one of the things that's really come out since I've joined the organisation, and I'm trying to map as the, you know, the change, as we've talked about, the change that we've seen in the sort of last 3 to 6 months. Of course, I have no history with this organisation pre-lockdown. So I'm trying to map what's normal during a time when nothing is normal. So it's quite an interesting sort of dichotomy that I'm having to face. But one thing that is really clear to me is that there is an urgency around digital channels for digital marketing. And they keep talking about digital marketing, and I keep saying it's marketing. Digital marketing is marketing. There isn't anything really else out there at the moment. But they're focused massively across the business of progressing our digital channels. And it's causing an absolute sort of eruption of tactical rather than strategic programs. So everybody's out there doing their digital events and their digital webinars, and they're trying to do their newsletters, and they're trying to get, they're starting to doing social media for the first time, and they're all rushing at it. And they really feel, I think, that there's this sense of urgency, but it's not being done in a kind of considered and strategic way, because everybody's just got their foot to the pedal. And I think one of the things that's happening with the international sales and marketing team that within the law firm is that we are incredibly busy because the lawyers are not busy. So they are turning to us and saying, I haven't got that much fee work, so I want to do marketing. So we are incredibly busy. So to strategize and to think and to do things in that sort of phase is really tough. So alongside that, I've joined the organization with a big remit. I have to develop a new website. I have to get the organization social media savvy. I have to look at the way we handle our internal communications. And I have to shift us as an organization to effective digital events. And they've made a huge shift towards webinars, but we now have to learn from the last 3 months, what do they mean and how do we move forward with digital events? And I've got to look at the same time at the brand strategy, the visual style, how we develop a content strategy, what we're doing with our employer brand, which is massive for any professional services firm. And then what we're doing with CSR, ESG, D&I, all the classic top phrases. So it really is absolutely everything I'm looking at. And as I say, in a time of total change with no history of the organisation during norm. So in all of that, there are the standard challenges that I face. There's the culture of the firm. And I jest not when I say that if I talk about modern selling and modern buying, the word they most struggle with is probably the word modern. I don't think in sort of the challenge that I face within legal services marketing, I think, is that people don't go to university to study law because they want to become salespeople. And yet, actually, they are our sales force. So you have got a sales force of incredibly intelligent academics who are quite introverted and nervous about social media, because there's a lot of risk involved in social media. They've definitely heard the words risk and social media, not happy with that. So we have this dynamic brand that we're trying to position being taken out to market by introverted academics, and it's a challenge. So we're looking at that whole culture of the organization. There are pockets of light. There are people who are really savvy, who want to focus on this, who understand where they've got to be in the new world, and it's great to work with them. But, you know, we've been talking today about ROI on both sides, ROI for buyers as well as ROI within, you know, how we give that to our businesses. And that is always tricky, but within a law firm, it's almost impossible, because if there is any conversion of a sale, it belongs to the lawyer. The marketing people, we are mere enablers of that journey. We are there trying to build awareness, and we are there trying to open the door for them to walk through. But if they walk through and successfully convert a client, that's their win, not ours. We don't get that ROI. So we're always a sort of an underlie of what they're doing. And I think that's one of the issues we've got to talk about. I've always heard the term getting marketing to the top table. And it's not a term, to be honest, I've generally ever related to before. But this organisation I'm at now, I do understand what marketing not being at the top table really means. For example, my CMO is the only member of the C-suite at my organisation who is not a board member, which I didn't realise before I joined. CMO thought she'd be on the board. She's not on the board. So there's an issue there of actually how marketing is seen within the organisation that I've got to try and change. And I think marketing, as my team is concerned, is they're seen as channel enablers. They're not strategic advisors. They're just there to enable the lawyers to reach their audiences. So put this out on social. I want to update my web page. Can you make sure my biography is correct on the website? I've got an article I want to publish. We're not there to actually shape and support them. So they've come to us and say, we want a new microsite for our sports practice. It's 35 pages of content. What images can we have? And I'm there going, but why do you want a microsite? And it's not a question they're open to, because they've already made the decision and they're not coming to us with the problem. They're coming to us with the solution. So that's a cultural shift I have to face. And then we layer onto that. As I said, I'm working, trying to work out what the new normal is when I have no idea what normal is within this organization because I'm new to it. But ultimately, I'm facing some things I think many of you will recognize. We have a recruitment freeze. My team is quite young, because that's a classic thing with professional services marketeers, is we hire in young people and then we train them up. We watch them leave. And once we've got them operating at a certain level and they do leave to progress their careers, we then hire in somebody who is young again and take them on that journey. So we're always fighting to develop the capabilities within our team, because we never hire at the same level as they leave. We always hire younger and drive them up. So it's a cycle of constant journey and constant evolution of the actual capabilities in the team. So my team are very young and it's very thin, and it's a recruitment freeze. So I have to make the most of the resources I've got. I have got budget. There's no issues with the fact that I've got budget. My main problem with budget right now is I cannot spend it. I cannot spend it because my team are too busy to take any more work on any more work in order to spend that budget. So we need to spend budget in order to show impact. And yet my team are too busy to spend. So that's another issue. I will be lucky to spend 60% of my budget this year. And of course, I'm worried if I don't spend it all, then next year they'll say, well, you got by with only 60% or less last year. So surely you don't need as much this year. So I've got to try and basically, a phrase I've said over many years is spend for the team. Go out there and find ways to effectively spend our marketing budget. I've got to do team building. I've got to work out how to brainstorm and innovate over WebEx with my team, as young as they are. And I've got to network across a firm and build my own brand across this firm remotely. So those are all really big challenges, but I hope that you will recognize some, if not all of those, from working within a marketing team doing B2B marketing. So trying to find some light in that. I think the benefits of what I'm seeing with the situation I'm facing. Well, I think anything I do is an improvement. I mean, the organization, there's nothing I've come across in the current way they do things I can say, that's really good. Everything needs to be evolved. Everything needs to be shaped, because everything within law firm marketing is always behind the curve. So you're dragging them that way anyway. And I think, you know, with COVID, it's the challenges have changed, and there's a bit of panic in the organization about whether they can keep up. But there isn't that solid base that you're working from. So anything I do is an improvement. So it's going to be pretty easy for me to have impact, I hope. We have had a massive culture shift, and both of you guys mentioned it. This is a shift that will never go back. So the fact that they're now using webinars and video conferencing to contact their clients is astoundingly quite a revelation to my law firm. So that's a huge shift that has happened. They've suddenly realized they don't have to go face to face to clients to actually sell. So we can build on that, and we can build on some openness to that. So I think I'm also going to take the opportunity to take some time to work out what's best for this organization, to see which way I go. And I've got because of this kind of crazy world we're sitting in right now, I have got the opportunity to take that time without being pressurized to have impact and to make a difference, because everybody understands that my team are under immense pressure, they're so busy, their workload is so huge, and that we have hardly any resource. So we're just really hamster wheeling it at the moment. So I can scan the horizon, step back with no sort of, right, you've been here 100 days, how are you going to change the world? So there's a little bit of reprieve in that, I think, and I'm going to make the most of that bubble. I'm going to focus on the small wins. I'm already finding those pockets of light I've told you about. I'm finding those small pockets of light and changing those around. And I think if I can get those small pockets of light, I can actually use that to build my own networking, my own brand across the firm, which is so key right now, particularly because I can't do the big shift because we're all so busy. And I'm looking at a 24-month plan. I'm not looking at 100 days. I'm expanding that out into possibly even 36-month plan to make a difference. And I think if I can leave you with anything in this time where everything is just up in the air and we're trying to find new channels and we're trying to find new ways of doing things, I think the one thing that I'm focusing on is to do the things you love, because you cannot say yes to everything. So I'm saying yes to the things I want to do. And I've got a really good excuse not to do the things I don't. If anyone comes anywhere near me with, I think we need to look at the internet, I can quite happily run to the cupboard and scream. So I think I would just like to say that if you're out there and like me struggling with trying to make it innovate within a B2B marketing world, if you're like me in a professional services business where we were talking before we came online today, how the other guys were talking about how they can do their measurements and tactics and ROI. And I said, where does finger crossing come in? Because that's all we use. If you're anywhere near that world, then please drop some questions in at the end, but I'd love to speak to you. And I wish you luck, because I'm crossing my fingers.
Hayley, thank you so much. That's a really, really great perspective on everything there, and lots of commonalities as well, which is great. I'm slightly shuddering at the thought of lawyers who aren't busy and decide they want to do marketing. That just scares me slightly. on to our final speaker. So Utkarsh Srivastav is Marketing Communications Lead at L&T Technology Services. Utkarsh is a passionate and experienced B2B marketing leader with over 13 years of experience in spearheading Europe marketing for leading IT and ER&D service companies. Utkarsh will offer his take on how black swan events can strike any time and how we can deal with them. Utkarsh, over to you.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me. And great listening to Scott, Wes and Hayley on their challenges and what they are doing about it, from buying journey to sales enablement to team building and stakeholder mapping. So that's quite an interesting set of challenges. What I'm going to talk about is how do we reincarnate B2B marketing for the rest of 2020 and take this forward journey into 2021. We are now 5 months since this massive change started, but actually it is not over yet. I mean, the phrase that change is the only constant is more intense today. And we are dealing with this change every day, thankfully at a bit slower pace now than earlier, so which is a good news right now. But when we look back, I think I wonder what would have happened if marketing leaders had to deal with this change 15 years ago, when we did not have that this amazing connectivity and technology at our disposal. Our response would probably be very different. Perhaps our over-reliance on email marketing would have flooded everyone's mailboxes. So I think technology, I strongly feel that technology has made it so much easier for us to manage this change better. And the current environment also reminds us that you don't know what you don't know. And if you don't know the answer, you actually are on the quest for finding information, and your quest for information should be part of your everyday process. And in this quest, one thing is clear, that managing change that is dependent on flattening of the curve requires a lot more flexibility and ingenuity. And there's no playbook for this, but we have now a lot of learning that we can incorporate for managing such black swan events in the future. So if you look back and it all started, almost all the major IT and engineering services companies in our area, they went ahead and refreshed their website messaging and content. So that was the first thing that they did. I think, but proof of the pudding was not only in updating our website, but making virtual work, not only for your own organization, but for everyone in the ecosystem. So what we have learned, I mean, today your digital presence is more important than before. Companies with more robust inbound marketing strategy, I think, are better placed than others. And the second thing I think what we've learned is, while you are integrating forward with the sales team, backward integration with the solution team is equally important. I mean, as the business is continuously evolving, especially in the tech world where we operate in, to address the needs of the new normal, And your offerings really need to change. You can't go to the market with the same set of offerings. You need to evolve them to make them relevant for the current times. And at the same time, if you look at sales alignment is equally important. You're educating sales team on the new marketing model is critical. So they need to understand what are the new possibilities, especially when there are travel restrictions. The events are not going to come back in the same shape and form in 2020. And events used to be a very key channel for the sales team in the IT and services world and the engineering services world. So how we need to keep educating them on what are the other options available and how can we help and support them. At the same time, you've got to keep an eye on customer fatigue as we are developing new channel. I think all of us will remember that there was a phase when we all could see that customers started to feel overwhelmed with webinars, and that pushed us to think differently, both on the channel side and on the content side. I wonder that that fatigue may really come back with some of the other things that marketing is trying to do, because at the end of the day, we all are humans and we want to face face-to-face interactions. So really need to keep an eye on customer fatigue with different marketing channels that we are trying to innovate. We all are missing physical events badly, and we really want them to come back. We all have learned new ways of enabling interactivity and customer experience. We know that virtual events have no boundaries. It has got very many positive plus points, while there are limitations. And as we progressed in this change, we really wanted to create new possibilities with latest tech beyond webinars. So one of the case in point is we had to inaugurate a digital lab in Bangalore, and we focused on infusing physical to digital. So we asked ourselves, we sell Internet of Things, we sell smart home solutions and virtual reality type of services. Why can't we apply some of these technologies to a marketing experience? Right from actually cutting the experience of cutting a ribbon to lighting a lamp in Bangalore from more than 4,000 miles away from Germany. So we made it happen actually to using technology and taking Zoom experience to a very different level. I think similar technologies such as augmented reality, virtual reality, all these technologies are really helping us to bring clients closer to our labs, our center of excellence for all the tech companies, especially when travel is restricted in today's world, and it will continue to be the same perhaps for the next 2-3 months. So how do we make sure that the interaction and engagement continues? I think there are various other areas we need to address to manage change. Right from first talk about sales enablement, and I think we are looking at how do we reimagine sales training? How do we bring in artificial intelligence or virtualization of sales training and Amazon style intuitive platform, which is not boring, and the sales team are kind of ready to invest time in those things. Same time, how do we reimagine content and bring out more stories? What should be the duration of our planning process? We started with a 2 months outlook, 3 months. Can we now go to 6 months or annual plans? Can we start developing more annual plans like we used to do before? We have that stability and that view into the future. And last but not the least, how do we rescale people to do more for less? So that, I think that will continue. The new normal, to summarize, is that for all other functions, be it finance, sales, or IT, marketing also needs to change, and it now needs to take the center stage in order. Technology is going to really help us in reincarnate marketing in 2020. Thank you.
Utkarsh, thank you so much, and definitely confirm the need for technology and how fundamental it's become to even more for all of our lives. So I think there's going to be some questions around that. Thank you very much. So that is, and if anyone's got any questions for Utkarsh, again, put it in the chat box, starting with Utkarsh, and we'll come back to those questions shortly. Thank you all for the presentations. Really, really good. We've got a few questions. I'm going to go back to Scott, who's been sitting there patiently. And let's see what we've got, and just keep adding questions in if you've got them. Scott, so you talked about the buyer journey, And obviously we know how complex that can be in B2B, and probably we sometimes make it a bit too complex, but I was wondering, I think if people are starting with a blank sheet of paper, where should people go to actually get the intel to devise the journey? Who are the people to talk to in the organization who really know the ins and outs of that journey?
I think there's two answers to that. First of all, it is absolutely fine to start with people inside the organization. You can probably see where I'm going to go the second part. Ultimately you need people who actually engage and interact with the buyers through the journey. So that isn't include sales, but you know, other personnel as well. But I mean, ultimately, you know, our recommendation is always you can't get away from either qualitative or quantitative research to help inform it. You know, if you want to really, this is all about the bias. If you really want to understand what the buyer's journey actually is, your danger is if you do it internalized, you're going to end up what the business wants the buyer's journey to be rather than what the buyer's journey actually is. And therefore, you know, what we do with most of the companies we work with is just start just with basic, customer interviews to understand what they went through on that journey. And it's not to say that people internally can't inform, of course they can inform, but you've got to be very careful you don't end up with an internal ideal rather than what actually the buyer is going through and the psychological aspects of that journey. So whether you start internally, then test with some qual, that would be the approach I would certainly be recommending.
Okay. Great, thank you. And then in terms of measurement, how do you ensure that the when you've got integration between CRM and whatever content system you might be using, whether it's a MA system, whatever, how do you ensure that the data that the sales teams is seeing is kind of useful and helpful? How does that?
Well, I think first of all, you need to understand what data you want your sales team to sell, because, you know, ultimately, if you take the approach that we take, which is to tag all the data, all the content through the journey, then you can end up, if you're not careful, by overfeeding to the sales team too much deep insight into what the customer's actually been doing. I mean, so you've got to ask yourself the first question: do you want your sales team to be able to understand every single piece of content that the buyer has consumed, and potentially when, and what all the needs therefore are around that? You know, we've worked with businesses where they've sort of taken that step back and said, actually, we want a filtered version of that, because that's just too much information for the sales team to need on any individual prospect. What they need to know is, broadly speaking, where is the customer on the journey? Broadly speaking, what are the needs that the customer is engaging with? They don't need to know all of the data which sits underneath that, because, you know, fundamentally, do you want your sales team to, by mistake, have a conversation which is saying, oh yeah, we saw you watch this video and read that article 4 months ago? I'm not sure that's necessarily a great place to be. But, you know, if you tagged all the content, it's all mapped in the journey, all that information exists.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Scott. Fez, so you talked about alignment at in terms of sales and marketing around modern selling, my modern buyers. I think we've probably all experienced organizations where there is perceived alignment at maybe various levels, maybe the senior level, but not in the real world of the rest of the sales organization. How do you ensure alignment at every level?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a tough challenge to ensure alignment at every level. I think, you know, you've got to break things down a little bit and understand where the gaps are. And you know, first you've got to understand what's working and then look at what's not working. And then, you know, you're not going to be able to create change on a massive scale, and you probably don't want to. So you just got to try and identify where you can make those small improvements to gain some, you know, the, you know, further increase in conversion rates or improvements in conversation started rates or wherever the challenge is. So I think, you know, trying to do a massive change is going to be quite difficult, breaking things down into smaller digestible pieces and then, you know, figuring out where the problems are with the marketing or sales alignment, That's going to be the easiest way to create change over time. And also, you know, the sales team have to adopt change, right? Because you can demonstrate how to make improvements, but they have to learn how to change their behaviors, I think is one of the biggest things. So behavior change is probably one of the first things you want to evaluate. You know, where can you make the impact there?
And related to that, if you look at it the other way, where do marketing need to change?
Yeah, I guess it's probably the two sides of the same coin, looking at where you can make those improvements and, you know, where the incremental improvements are. And it could be, you know, helping the sales teams just to find the content, right? Like Scott was talking about earlier, tagging and just directing them. And Koresh mentioned it earlier as well, you know, just giving them the view of this is the buyer's journey and this is where the content is, and just signposting some of that insight, like I talked about earlier, intent data, right? So it's about, you know, it's great having the intent data, but then activating that data in the sales process and giving them the context of how to use it. You have to, from a marketing perspective, I think, you know, show them the journey, what's happening on the marketing side of things, what campaigns are running, you know, keep that awareness within the organization. Otherwise, sales just is given a lead and they, you know, they just start a conversation for wherever they think it should start, right? So, you know, there needs to be context and communication. And often what we're seeing is, you know, what we run with clients is a weekly sales and marketing conversation. Now, obviously that depends on the size of your organization and maturity, right? But, you know, just trying to have this kind of weekly update across sales and marketing, what campaigns are we running, what's working, what's not working, just having the conversation is a good starting place, because often teams are quite siloed in that respect.
Indeed, it's a joint effort, one goal ideally. Thank you, Fez. Hayley, so many aspects to sort of talk about here. You talked about the ways you engage with different parts of the organization, because you are trying to deal with everything from training to employer brand to everything and anything. Who are the kind of key areas of the organization that you think will allow you to do the things you want to do? Are there kind of certain departments where you think they're the key to this happening?
I think with any professional services firm, then it really is, it's a hierarchy. So it's who the big fee earners are. And they tend to be the service group heads or the practice group heads. So you need to go to your head of tech media and communications, or your head of energy and utilities from a sector perspective, or you need to go to the head of the competition team or the head of corporate. And you have to get them on board and you have to network through them. So one of the things, as I said, because I'm looking at a new website at the moment and building a new website that's going to launch hopefully midway through next year, we're in the situation where we have this hiatus on the website. So we're doing basically sort of emergency fixes only, really. We're carrying on posting content, but we're not sort of improving the current website, because all the focus is going on to the existing one. Improving the existing one, because all the focus is going on to the new one. So that means that we have this sort of stop gap where we're saying to the business, it's not about the website as your channel to improve. And so what we're utilizing is saying to them, you know, we're in a digital world now, massively. We are a law firm that is focused on helping organizations with that technical world, that we are a technology and digital focused law firm. So we need to be using those channels correctly. And why aren't you using LinkedIn? And then I'm using LinkedIn as a way to actually network across the thing by doing literally doing LinkedIn training with the key things. Now, it's a bit of an odd thing for me as head of marketing to be doing LinkedIn training with some IP lawyers in Australia. But what it's allowing me to do personally is to get out there and build my own personal brand, literally through attending their groups, getting onto their group agenda, talking to them about the importance of LinkedIn as a business development channel, telling them that I will give them surgeries of three or four partners at once, looking at their specific LinkedIn profiles and how I can help them and help them shape that. And I'm utilizing that cascade. And my next phase will be to try and get those training sessions out to train the trainer and cascade LinkedIn. So I'm saying to people, the digital channel that we really need, there's two digital channels for us right now for marketing. There's events, so all of our digital events, and we have an events team who've basically changed overnight to digital events. They're incredibly busy, but we're sorting that out. We're getting, you know, and then we've got the LinkedIn as the next, as the sales platform, and just changing their minds to it. I mean, so for example, classic one I thought was hilarious with my LinkedIn training was this group of IP lawyers in Sydney. One of them said to me, very nervous about LinkedIn, they said, we don't really know whose invitation should we accept, because you know, you don't want to accept people who are, you know. And they said, you know, it's easy with networking. You go in the room and there are some people who are standing at the side of the room, not talking to anybody. There are some people who are just in the room hoovering up business cards and don't want to have a conversation. They just want your business card and they're on to the next. And there are other people standing in the middle of the room having really great networkers and really sort of getting good contacts. And I said, you have just described what LinkedIn is. That's what LinkedIn is. There will be people on LinkedIn who are just trying to get your business card and send you irrelevant sales messages about how to, whether or not you want to buy a photocopier ink. And you do have to be careful about selecting those. And then you want to be that good networker in the middle. But right now, the situation I have is the majority of my lawyers are not just the people at the side of the room drinking the coffee and talking to nobody. They're sitting at the side of a room with a bag on their head because their profiles are actually private. So, I mean, the journey is immense that I've got to take them on. So so I'm just going out there, and the channels I'm utilising, the people I'm utilising are my lawyers, starting with as many groups as possible to get out there, and just going out there and banging a massive LinkedIn drum for the next 6 months, I think, is what I'm going to be doing to try and drag everything. That will help me with employer brand. That will help me with marketing channels. That will help me with strategy. That will help me so many things. So my events team are taking care of the events, and I'm out there touting how to build your profile and your personal brand. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think it does, and I think it sounds like it puts you in good stead to sort of build those foundations, isn't it, over the next few months. And
yeah it really is foundations.
Fantastic, thank you, Hayley. Utkarsh, have you seen a difference in the different sectors, in the way different sectors are responding at the moment, because you obviously work in a business that works across a lot of sectors, so I'm just interested in the different sectors.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think different sectors are at different stages of recovery, and you really need to make sure that you align your marketing efforts to their journey. Some sectors are currently witnessing growth, whereas some sectors are having difficulties in looking at their cost as well as business operations. They have different needs. So what the first thing that we really did was to look at set of sectors we need to go and do demand generation level of marketing, and then the set of sectors where you need to go and do more demand, but more something which is more customer intimacy related and supporting them with the right advice, right business support that they need. And that's maybe there were sectors that we don't need to go and do nothing. We just need to make sure that we wait for the right opportunity, wait for the right time for those sectors to come back, because sometimes if you are talking to those sectors, they are not ready to buy. So we categorized the sectors into different zone and areas, and worked backwards with our solution team to understand what are those right offerings and set of messaging that we can take to them, because we have a number of SKUs and plenty of offerings or solution sets to take to our customers, and you really cannot during a time like this, you cannot take 100 or 50 of those offerings to your customers. You really need to focus on 5 or 10 that really matters. So we did that exercise. We trimmed down our marketing efforts and only on those specific opportunities or all messaging on those solutions, and then we took it to different sectors. For example, manufacturing and telecom, these were the two focus sectors that where we were seeing growth, and we really worked hard to make sure that we engage with those sectors with the right campaign. Similarly with healthcare and medical, we did a lot of efforts in creating new campaigns and virtualizing our labs and the presence that we have to make sure that those whatever story we have is available for these companies to look at and engage with us in the right time and the right way.
That's fantastic. Thank you. It's good to hear those sectors that seem to be finding a way through it. And I think we all sort of heard stories of some of those as well. So that's great. Thank you, Utkarsh. And I think that's gone very far, very quickly. So I think that's it for the presentations. So it just leaves me to say thank you. A huge thank you to our speakers, Scott, Fess, Hayley, and Utkarsh, and also to the people that supported the presentation in the back room. So Louise, Claire, Elise, Alex, and Jay, and to everybody that's attended today. This webinar has been recorded, obviously, and you can listen to it from tomorrow. It will be promoted on LinkedIn and various other channels. The next Show and Tell webinar is in a fortnight, and we'll be looking at how change affects business marketing with PwC's Stefan Döring, Green Target Global Group's Dafina Grapsi-Penny, LexisNexis UK's Matthew Leopold, and global marketing leader Sumit Vermani. So next Wednesday, it's our big networking webinar, The Big Hall, with LHH's Kerry Simmons, Association of Project Management's Faye Thomason, and Adaptomy's. I knew I'd struggle with that one. Adaptomy's Will Wright. You'll need to sign up on our website to take part in that one. So everything is available to download and is on our weekly podcast. And this week, it's all about content marketing. And finally, if you sign up to be a member of the Business Marketing Club, you get access to all of our events and webinars, to our mentoring service for business marketers, to our white papers and our blogs free of charge. And in fact, those white papers include one from Emeritus Professor of Cranfield University School of Management, Malcolm McDonald. And it's about how to develop financially qualified, quantified value propositions that capture the attention of their customers. All of that's on businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you need any further information, you can contact Dave at davestevensnow@gmail.com. And finally, thank you all for listening and for taking part. See you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.